Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
6 seconds to go. Comes in to Tucker. Ewing sets a screen. The shot is off. Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Strick and Roll. I'm your host, Winnie Pooh, in this episode 14. I'm joined by first-time guest of the pod. His name is Danny Meringue. That's at Danny Meringue on Twitter. He is the host of the Jack Ramsey's podcast on Blue Wire's pods. He's a Blazers fan. Danny, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's like a little, the official introductions always get me just because I am the least serious person on the face of the planet. So I've done some speaking stuff, and I've done some interviews with like Big J college students who are just like, "How did you get where you are?" And I'm like, mostly just being an a-hole. So don't take me seriously. Don't go too far over the top. Like it's not that serious, but you know, it's. That's how it goes. And I have to apologize to anybody listening. If you hear the occasional puppy bark, I have a puppy that's been here for a week that is still very excited. And occasionally, my dog is very well trained and does not bark, but the puppy does not yet. So you may hear a bark here or there.
Still breaking him in.
He listens really well. He's really smart. He just poops everywhere. So poops and barks. Those are the two things we're working on. Everything else, man, it's just smooth sailing. That crating, listen, man, that first night it was 15 minutes. The second night, nada. He goes out like a light. So we're winning. We're winning in the long run. I'd rather clean up poop and stay up all night. So it's a positive process.
Before we get started, I have to announce Strickland has Patreon. You can subscribe to it. There's $6 here that gets you access to this podcast every Friday that I do with Prez. It also gets you access to the mailbag that I do every other week with Jeremy and Drew. Furthermore, you get access to the Strickland Discord where the conversation never stops. Draft channel has been popping since the lottery. There's further tiers. There's a $9 here that gets you access to my solo pod, Strick and Roll. That also gets you access, much more importantly, to wonderful weekly articles by the tremendous talented duo of Matthew Miranda and Jack Huntley, two of the best in the business. Beyond that, there's further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. Those get you access to a variety of other benefits like listening in on pod recordings, live watch parties, merchandise discounts, and if you listen to the Monday pod, even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly. Whether you choose to subscribe or not, none of this would be possible without you. So without further ado, all right, look, we have you here. We have you here.
Yes, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the Blazers who, you know, draft night did not go as hoped, but you do have the 7th pick in the draft. Uh-huh. You have some interesting decisions to make. Uh-huh. I guess before we talk about what lies ahead, what the fuck happened last season? And yeah. I mean that in a, I mean, I think there was, it was always, Dame is so good. I think he has covered up a lot of regular season flaws. Yeah. And, obviously without him, that kind of just did not happen this year. Were you fine with them moving on, like moving on from Terry Stotts? Was that just something that needed to happen at that point?
So I love me some Tear Bear. I think he made chicken salad out of chicken shit regularly. I think Neil Olshey's roster building processes was a disaster. Did really well around the edges, like reclamation projects, getting something out of it, but just refused wholeheartedly to make any significant changes to the roster. He just would not do it. GMs and executives, agents, players, everybody around the league knew that he was unwilling to trade CJ McCollum. Hilariously, I want to credit it, but I can't remember who did it, but it was an article in Bleacher Report where David Griffin basically said, yeah, no, everybody knew Neil was never going to trade CJ. And so when Joe Cronin got empowered, like, he called Neil to say, okay, how do I get CJ McCollum? Like, it's this. So all of the changes that happened, they needed to happen. The problem was the Blazers waited like 6-7 months too long to like save a season. Cause these changes should have happened a year ago. So, Terry being let go, I mean, it ran its course. He was successful, but like things got stagnant. Neil should have been let go at the same time, and they should have moved on from CJ McCollum at that point in time. And then you can litigate the Norman Powell contract, but that's what happens when you have a GM who gets put up against the wall and just has zero recourse other than knowing he has to re-sign the guy, or he gave away Gary Trent Jr. for free. So,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Yeah, and I mean, if I remember correctly, when they signed when they signed Norman Powell back, there was a lot of reporting that he had just signed the contract because it was like the most money he could get, but he wanted to leave.
He absolutely wanted to leave. And actually, the Knicks were a team.
Yeah.
Tibbs
wants it. We know Tibbs wanted him.
The way I was told is that the Knicks were the team.
Okay.
So, yeah, New York was the team. But they were not obviously going to be able to go that extra year because the Blazers had the bird rights and the ability to give them that fifth year. And I believe Dallas was another team that was very close. They wanted to do, I think, a sign and trade with Tim Hardaway Jr. So,
yeah, I mean, that makes sense because we ended up signing Fournier for the ticket
almost price. This exact same price.
Yeah. It got reported as $478, but it was effectively $354 with like an $18 million option. Obviously, Norm got 5 years guaranteed, so more power to him.
Get that bag, baby.
Yeah. I mean, that the Knicks could never match that. So that definitely tracks. There was reporting even going back to last year's trade deadline that the Knicks were interested in Norman Powell. Mm-hmm. So that completely makes sense. I want to ask you about CJ McCollum because you have been pretty vocal about, like, you think CJ McCollum's a good player, but he needed to be traded a while back. Yeah. And I guess, like, when did you come to the conclusion that CJ McCollum needed to be traded? And also, like, I don't know. I mean, I know the trade they ended up making, a lot of it was obviously about dumping salary. But like, now the asset return obviously does not look great. What are your, how do you feel about that? And do you still think that, like, because of the salary they've dumped and kind of, they have a trade exception and all this kind of stuff that they've carved out from all these moves, is it still a situation where you're like, if Cronin kind of gets a shit together, like, he can definitely still salvage and put together a competitive roster around Dame?
So the beginning of this is the whole CJ McCollum thing. Always have thought, you can go back through the tweet history, the article history, the podcast history, TV history. It's all there. CJ McCollum, very good player, near borderline all-star. But that was like peak CJ McCollum. Good player. I think he's what, like, fifth all time in scoring now for the Blazers. Like, he's probably gonna have his jersey retired in Portland because they retire everybody's jersey. But none of that shit matters. Just like, as far as like the team building side of things, like, good player, pairing him with a better version of him never really made sense. So I was actually one of those guys in 2015 when Wesley Matthews ruptured his Achilles. and that, for those that don't know, that 2015 Blazers team was,
I thought they had a shot.
They were a legit title contender.
Yeah, they had a shot.
That's Damian Lillard, Wesley Matthews, Nick Batum, LaMarcus Aldridge, Robin Lopez. And if you go look at that bench, you had Aflalo, Will Barton, CJ McCollum.
Yeah, I mean, even the Aflalo trade was so weird that they made. But yeah, but anyway,
sorry. Another trade that I wasn't a fan of. I should say that they didn't have all those guys on the bench at the same time. They rotated through those trades, but. After that series against Memphis, when it was very clear that LaMarcus Aldridge was gone and they were going to rekey and retool, I wanted McCollum out. And not because I was like, he's a bad player. I'm like, man, he just showed out on grit and grind. He showed he can give Tony Allen buckets. He showed he can give Mike Conley buckets. Trade him. Get assets right now because you're losing LaMarcus Aldridge. Reset. Clear the table around Damian Lillard. And of course, for those that don't know, CJ McCollum is Neil O'Shea's shiny talisman. He refused. That is, Damian Lillard was technically drafted by Neil O'Shea, but he was hired, I think, 6 weeks before the draft. Chad Buchanan did all the work beforehand. That's that everybody who is inside the NBA knows that the Damian Lillard was done before Neil Olshey was ever hired. So that wasn't really his guy. CJ was his guy, and he drove through a snowstorm to go see him play at Lehigh. He tells this really stupid story every single time, and it's like the most ridiculous thing. It just makes you want to just, you know, lose your mind. CJ's a good player, but fit never made sense. And there were opportunities to trade and to get a Jimmy Butler. Twice. There were opportunities for Paul George.
Was that Harden thing real last
year? Yes, 100%. 100%.
Okay.
So Harden was on the table.
Do you know what the like overall package would have been? It would have been CJ, a couple of picks.
CJ, a couple of picks, and I think there's one of the piece for salary filler. I can't remember exactly how it went out, but the...
Yeah, that's insane.
The hesitation there, the hesitation there was the free agency, and Neil would not do it because, and the thing is that Neil and James know each other from Artesia back in California. Neil used to run workouts. Like those guys are actually really close. But James basically told him like, I'm going to test free agency. But yeah, there's been multiple opportunities over the years for the Blazers to drastically improve. And Neil just wouldn't pull the trigger. And that was kind of like the leading frustration for me because of team building and roster construction. And they also paid CJ McCollum a year ahead of when he should have been paid, and they overpaid him. And it put them in a very, very difficult spot that basically led them to where they are now. It was kind of the first shoe to drop. The trade finally happening was because Joe Cronin was like, nah, I need to clear the table of every deal.
Right.
This is exactly what needs to happen. And so CJ, good player. Is he commensurate with his contract? In my opinion, no. So
yeah, I think he's probably like the way I thought of it was it was an overpay at the time, and like every year that it goes down, it gets worse.
Yeah,
it gets worse, but it's also like more palatable to take on in trade because you're like, well,
there's one less year.
Right. And that's why, like, I suggested the deadline. I got a lot of like heat for this for Knicks fans because I was like, what if the Blazers would just, I don't remember the exact trade I proposed, but it was like some version of like trading Julius Randle for CJ McCollum. Mm-hmm. And I got like so many Knicks fans are like, why would we do this trade? Randle is like, he was all NBA last year and all this shit. I'm like, yeah, like I get it, but I don't think that guy's coming back. And like CJ McCollum's not the greatest player in the world, but like, yeah.
But he can dribble, pass, and shoot, which is something the Knicks struggle with.
Yeah, and he just gives you scoring. I mean, I just think there's value to like, you look around the NBA right now, like, it's almost like if you don't have a guard, a primary ball handler, however you want to phrase it, that can give you like 20, 25 points per game a night with three-level scoring, you don't have a shot.
Yeah.
And like, is McCollum the guy that's going to become, like, he's not going to take you to a championship level, but it just gave you another piece. Anyway, I don't want to go too far down the track. I just thought like, to me, like, if you had asked me the same thing 2 years ago, I'd have been like, absolutely not. This McCollum contract is insane. Like, I don't want any. But this time I was like, yeah, well, you know, there's two more years.
You can talk yourself into it. Yeah. And here's the thing. Like, you look at the situation in New Orleans. Griff was basically put up against it.
Yep.
Like, he's borderline losing his job. And so he had to do something. And the perceived value, depending on who you talk to. There are some out there, like let's just say the ubiquitous Danny Ainge, who, you know, the idea of what value is always so skewed of, the price was too rich, or we could have offered this. Those offers are always out there. But if you talk to the public-facing guys, the Zach Lowe's, the Kevin Peltons of the world on the media side, they all say that CJ McCollum's deal is a negative value deal. And so the Blazers took, and they were able to get something out of it. The kick in the dick is that the second pick that the Blazers would have had this year that would have conveyed was an awkwardly protected 5 through 14 pick that ended up becoming number 8 this year. That's a bit of a problem.
So when I saw that protection, I thought this like at the time, I was like, okay, look, the Lakers kind of suck. Which I thoroughly enjoy. I hope you enjoy.
Oh yeah, no, listen, man. I'm from LA, but I love watching that. It's just a beautiful thing.
But like, and I was just like, I don't mind like giving the Pelicans some kind of chance to keep the pick. But I was like, maybe like, could they? Do you think there was some leeway there that like, you know, maybe you could have gotten it 5 to 10 protected? I don't even know. I mean, I think it would have conveyed anyway, but you get what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there was some leeway there.
There may have been, but as far as I understand it, Larry Nance Jr. was told he was not going to be traded.
And
ultimately what happened? Larry Nance Jr. was traded. I think that was in order to get that pick.
Okay.
I think that is what enabled that. Like, that's why everybody's like, well, why didn't you get the protections on the Lakers pick? And I'm thinking, because I don't think the deal was that great, because you didn't get any of the, like, not even the blue chip guys. You didn't even get the next step down. You didn't even get the white chip guys. You didn't get a Jackson Hayes, let alone a Herb Jones or a Trey Murphy the third. Like, they got Nah and they got Didi. Like, listen, like, shout out to those guys. Like, go get your money. Like, I hope you guys figure it out. But Nah's flipped twice before it's all said and done. And Didi at the time had a torn meniscus. So it's like, and I had Didi at Hoop Summit, look, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. That's the rawest dude I've ever seen. I mean, like, but again, it's just to say, like, what they got in return. And that's Larry Nance Jr., who they had a first round pick, obviously involved with the Chicago Bulls that they'll convey most likely next year. And they had two first round picks in Robert Covington. So they traded out guys who you had collectively three first round picks tied up. And then basically the last 3 years, and Norman Powell, who was traded for Gary Trent Jr., who was the, what was it, 32nd or 34th pick in the second round, essentially another first round pick. So you traded out four first round picks basically, and you got back Josh Hart, the idea of a first round pick this year, hopefully a lottery pick, and what ended up being Joe Ingles and Didi Luzada. Like, that's not great from the New Orleans side of this thing. So was it great? No. Had that lottery pick conveyed? Because if somebody showed a graph the other day of the lottery, the playoff chances for the New Orleans Pelicans, like 2 days before the trade, they were so far out. Like, it was the perfect shit show circumstances for New Orleans to make the playoffs. You had to have COVID take Paul George off the floor to have an opportunity to even get into the play-in. Like, it's just such a strange situation that everything just played out on top of the Blazers obviously getting the seventh pick, that it's just been one kick after another. And I said the same thing in January that I'll say now. Come August 1st, that's when I'm going to judge Drew Cronin, because he's dug himself a hell of a hole, taking a lot of risks. But if the opportunity isn't given to try to save it over the next 3 months, then what the hell did you do? Like, you did it for nothing. You gave Neil Olshey basically 10 years to tinker around and make mistakes left, right, and center, but you're not going to give the other guy 10 months to try to undo his mistakes. So while I wish and I hope that, you know, they did their absolute best for those pick protections and getting that to convey, I have to at least believe from the folks that I've talked to that Joe is smart enough and understands enough that their position, that they did the best they could.
Yeah. Yeah. The Blazers are just like, they've been a team. He's been one of my favorite players for a while. The last year of him repeatedly telling us that he's not running from the grind has not exactly been my favorite version of Dame. But hey, more power to him. Do you see, like, so this opportunity now that Cronin has to kind of put pieces around Dame, is this a situation where it's like, they're going to give this year, but if this doesn't pan out this year, is it going to be like finally time to be like, hey, look, like, we tried, but this is not it. And do you think Dame, like, is there a scenario where Dame, I do think he's being genuine when he says he would like to.
He is.
Yeah.
Like, legitimately, for all the Knicks fans out there, don't get it twisted.
I 100% believe that, like, in his ideal world, he wants to end his career in Portland. I also believe that it's like, he wants to end his career in Portland, but he wants to believe that he has a chance to compete. And so I guess my question is, like, if they make whatever moves they make, and we'll talk about kind of things that are on the table for them, if they make these moves and this, and, you know, they, it comes out and they kind of just whimper around in the first round or something like that, is that a scenario where next offseason he goes to Cronin, he goes to ownership, and it's like, hey, look, like, we gave it a shot. You know that I put in my all. I respect everything you've done, but maybe it's best if we part ways. Is that a scenario that's still on the table a year from now?
I don't think so. I believe at bare minimum it's going to be 18 months. What is going to stop that from happening is $107 million.
Yes, that extension. Right.
That extension is going to happen this summer. And when that extension happens, Dame is loyal beyond belief. So he's aware of it too. And there's a line that I always mention anytime this kind of comes up. I think it was like year three or year four. Somebody asked Dame kind of like, you know, the very ubiquitous, you know, how involved in you or are you in player personnel decisions and stuff like that. And he's like, I'm too loyal. I'll tell you this. If I was in charge, Sasha Pavlovich would still be on this team. Sasha was a end of the bench guy on his rookie year. And he loves Sasha. He still talks about him to this day.
Yeah.
Like, so that's just how he is. He's cut from that cloth. I tend to believe that in 2 years, if things are not like really showing above where they were, which was they kind of had that ghost Western Conference Finals run that was, I mean, it was real, but was it, you know, kind of situation.
The game 7 in Denver was fun.
Yeah, listen, that series was a blast. That team has lapped them already.
Yeah.
I mean, they humiliated them last year. So if they get back to where above where they were, basically back to around where the Dame LaMarcus team was, which is, yeah, no, that's a Western Conference Finals team. Like, I don't think he goes anywhere. I genuinely don't. Now, does he pull a Gary Payton at the end of his career and maybe go to Golden State to go home for a year or two and try and chase a ring there or something along those lines? Maybe. But I genuinely see him playing 14, 15, 16 years in Portland. That's just kind of how he is. I don't think you're ever going to get him before he's 34, 35. I don't think you're going to get him out of Portland unless something goes completely sideways.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I mean, was that closer like last? Because there was all that kind of smoke coming out during. I think that was
the last summer. Was a very serious deal as far as like what is going to happen, and that was I think less about Dame wanting to go. Like Dame took meetings with LeBron James in LA. Like if you're 100% in, you don't take meetings elsewhere. Like. Let's just be honest. But I think it was less about him wanting to go and him more about flexing his muscle for the first time and having a power struggle. Because while he respects Neil to a point, there was some stuff came out that after Neil was dismissed here that Dame was not a fan of. And Neil basically threw reporting, threw Dame under the bus a couple times. And I don't think their relationship is all that great now. So I would definitely want to ask him what he thinks of that whole relationship, that dynamic now. But there was a power struggle, and Dame won, and rightfully he should have. And that honestly, he should have done this 2 or 3 years ago. But through that process, I honestly think as weird as it sounds, I think him getting that surgery makes him stay here longer because he feels like he needs to owe and show that hey. This is who I am. Not that guy that you saw last year who was a shell of himself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was, yeah. I mean, I didn't really, it was like, it was weird watching him because physically I was like, he still kind of looks the same. He's just missing all these fucking shots. But yeah, like, okay. So look, they have this trade exception that I think is what, like 20.6 million. Is that right?
Yeah. Basically call it 21 when it's all said and done, because yeah. You've got the, what, 150% to play with. When you do the actual math, it goes up to like 20.98 or something along those lines.
Okay. So call it 21 million. They got the seventh pick overall. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to either operate as an over the cap team or an under the cap team. I think it probably makes more sense for them to operate as an over the cap team.
They'll operate as over the cap.
Yeah. That's what I would guess. So like, and you know, we talked about this a little bit in, when we were DMing, but like around the NBA, and this is partly a function, this always happens kind of like during the playoffs, but I do think there's like more discontent in a lot of ways, and not even just discontent, but like free agency does not exist. So the way for players to really move is through trade. And so I do think we're going to see a lot of trades this offseason. And that I think gives Portland an opportunity given the contracts they have and you know the nature of all of them. Like Josh Hart had a great season last year for him and his contract is super interesting and fun for like a team.
There's not a team in the league that wouldn't look at Josh Hart and be like, yeah, we want that.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
$13 million for a well-rounded player that can just kind of fit into literally any team, any scheme.
Yeah, and it's like got all these weird functions to it and like non-guarantee dates and all that shit.
Yeah, all the weird triggers that were just like all the things that GMs look at and go, that's perfect. I can use that in like 18 different ways. And they also have the Bledsoe deal, which another one has a really awkward guarantee. It's at $3.8 million right now, but guarantees July 4th or 6th. So it's actually, you get a couple days into free agency.
Yeah, and I think that's a contract that could could easily be moved on draft night or something like that too.
I would imagine that's what likely ends up happening.
Yeah, and so look, let's talk a little bit about like what is out there for Portland. I guess we'll just start with the Knicks specific one since we are a Knicks podcast. Julius Randle, who has had a very interesting time in New York. His first year started off very poorly under the wonderful genius that is David Fizdale, picked up actually after that. If you look at it, I actually think his first year in New York was okay. Not great, not terrible, but okay. Mm-hmm. Second year, obviously, is amazing. Makes all NBA, all-star, whatever. Fans come back. And then this year, he's just all over the place, just angry, fucking getting into shit with people all the time, yelling at refs, fucking flipping off the fans. It's just a terrible situation.
All around good times.
Yes, exactly. But, like, there is a really talented player there, which we did see in 2020-21. And, like, you know, for the Blazers, you're talking about what do you want to... Like, you have to take some risks, I think, in their situation of, like, you know, they have some decent assets and contracts, but they don't have anything that, like... Because Dame is the one thing... And they're not going to trade Dame.
Yeah.
So, what do you... And we've talked about this. I have thought this all year, like... I don't see any scenario, especially not for fucking Julius Randle, where they're going to even consider Anthony Simons going on that trade. That's insane.
The NBA playoff action is nonstop at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets if they do. Looking to turn a small bet into a big payday during the NBA playoffs? With DraftKings Same Game Parlays, you can do just that. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets like which team will win, total threes made, total rebounds, and more. And boom, you have a shot at an even bigger payout. Right now, all customers can place a same game parlay with three or more legs and get a free bet back up to $25 if one leg doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Bet $5 on any NBA team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. That's promo code TBPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
I'll tell you this right now. The bar for Anthony Simons being moved at bare minimum is Jaylen Brown. At bare minimum. And even then, they probably don't do it.
Interesting. I actually would be interested. That's an interesting trade. I wonder if Boston would,
take a look at that. It makes a lot of sense for both sides, to be
honest. Yeah, I agree. But like Randle is a really talented guy. He plays a position at the four that I think is very important for the Blazers to fill. You know, we were kicking around some trades and you put out a poll yesterday. I don't actually know how the fuck it ended up. But I think the hypothetical trade was Randle and the Knicks' 11th pick for the Blazers, that Bledsoe contract, and the 7th pick. Personally, I'm just saying this, I think the Knicks would try to be like, hey, can we get that Milwaukee 2025 pick? I don't think Portland would do that. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, they will. The chances of them moving two picks...
it would need to be for a higher caliber player.
It would need to be. So the bar starts probably with... maybe OG Anunoby, definitely DeAndre Ayton. Like those are the kind of guys. Like,
please don't do it for OG Anunoby. That's not a good idea.
I tell you this, Dame loves OG. So
Dame needs to let you cook. All right, I think we just ended up talking like, you know, you could probably get like a couple of seconds or something like that. Maybe thrown it. Now, is that a trade that you look at and you're like, it's probably not the number one trade on your board, but if the Blazers made it, do you think like that's a trade that Dame would be one? Would he be okay with it? And do you think that's a trade that like is reasonable, that actually you could look at it and be like, hey, look, like, we still keep a lottery pick, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can still trade. Now, you still have your two firsts to trade, like you said, for maybe a DeAndre Ayton or an OG Anunoby or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that a trade? Like, is that a trade that you look at it, and if they pull the trigger, you'd be like, yeah, that's fine. I like that.
I think value-wise, it makes sense. I think fit-wise, it just doesn't, because and this is what makes it difficult. Dame and Ant are not the best defenders, and I talk to Ant regularly. I love him. He will be the first one to tell you that his first couple years in the league, he struggled mightily. Before he started taking on like the offensive burden after Dame went down, like showed, hey, I can be like Jordan Poole or Tyler Herro or whatever, like, young guard you want to talk about right now, like, just dumb efficiency while shooting the absolute lights out, scoring at will. He started to show some growth defensively. He started to show that he's not going to die on every screen. He's not going to fall asleep on the backside. He's going to be more aggressive in passing lanes. Like, he started to show like little flashes. And what's funny about Ant is he has told me, you know, last season, I'm working on my handle. I'm working on my playmaking. And he went from basically not being able to like truly create to running an offense. Like, he has gotten so good at things. We were talking about this, you know, when he kind of just burst, like truly burst onto the scene at the second half of the year this year. I go, man, listen, I always thought you'd be good. I never thought you'd be this good. He goes, it's funny, man. My dad told me the same thing the other night. So, you know, it's just like one of those kind of things. Like, I knew you were nice. I didn't know you were that nice. So.
It's actually really funny because I remember, like, so I've thought for the longest time that the Blazers actually draft pretty well. And
just,
like,
just not lottery picks in the last 10 years outside right. of Damian Lillard. Like, I mean. Yeah.
And so, like, it's funny because I remember when they traded Barton for Aflalo, like, my theory has always been, like, they're a team that if there's, like, a guy they've drafted and maybe he's in a second or third year and they're maybe thinking about moving him, they're not a bad team to do a deal with because
no.
I think their scouts are pretty good, clearly.
Yeah, they've done right. really well in that part. Like, if you look at their second-round picks, outside of, like, Jokic and Draymond, find me a team that has done better in the second round. You've got guys like Pat Connaughton. You've gotten Will Barton. You've got Gary Trent Jr. Mm-hmm. Like, that's find me somebody who's done that good in the second round. That's nuts to get like legitimate high end playoff yeah. caliber rotation guys. But yeah, like, and that's where I said, like, the thing with Neil is that, you know, he's done really well on the edges, and that's again yeah. one of those edges. As far as the Randall part of this, I think the value side of it makes a ton of sense, and this is kind of coming back to the whole Dame and Ant thing. Those three guys on the floor defensively just does not work, especially with Nurk being just so limited to drop. He likes to say he can do more, and he has shown that he can do a little bit more, but he's also 7 foot, 300 pounds, and come playoff time, the basketball changes quite a bit, and you just can't have that many guys that can get hunted. Nurk, his range is severely limited. While he can knock down kind of a quasi 8-10 footer, he's just not a great finisher, and he's a subpar 3-point shooter. I think he finished at like 28-30%. Like, he's taking like one a game. It's not a big deal. But he and Randall kind of operate in the same position. So if you were able to swing another deal where you had a stretch big who could be a rim protector, like a Miles Turner, like if that was their big, you could probably talk me into that a little bit more, because then they could try to get a legitimate 3-and-D wing. Because then you can move some of the playmaking elements to Randall.
Randall and Miles Turner do work out together in the offseason.
Listen, man, I as a front court, that's a fun front court. Like, I think they complement each other really well. Turner being, again, that floor spacer and rim protector that allows Randall to play a couple steps up, like free throw line extended, and play in a little bit of space defensively and not be totally on an island.
And you have Dame, who's like going to have his own gravity too.
Yes, exactly. And you get all of a sudden Miles Turner on roll gravity or a pop gravity, and you have Randall working two-man games in the middle of the floor and Anthony Simons on the weak side. Yeah, you can, like, you can talk yourself into that, but like as soon as you put Yusuf Nurkic into that, like, that's clunky. Like,
so for you, Randall has to be part of a sequence.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Like, and so, and I think honestly for the Blazers, I think that's something they would consider, but it would have to be a part of a sequence in a very particular set of circumstances. And I think it would be like option like 5 or 6 for them.
Okay.
The guys that I see them going after, Ayton and OG are the two names that have come up a ton in discussions.
Jeremy Grant, obviously, it's just ad nauseum. Basically, if that deal was gonna, like, if they want that deal to happen, it'll happen. And the Blazers aren't going to trade their number 7 for Jeremy Grant. That's not going to happen. They'll move the Milwaukee pick, Keon Johnson, and Eric Bledsoe. That'll likely be the package for Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, and I think people, like, you know, we talked about this also a little bit, but like Keon Johnson to some, not to some, I would guess to like a decent amount of front offices in the NBA still retains like
first round pick value because he's a kid.
Yeah, and he was, I mean, look, like the draft last year was ridiculous, like so deep, so loaded. Mm-hmm. He went, what, 21st, I think?
Yeah.
So like in this draft, there are probably front offices that would view him as like a 14, 15.
I was just saying probably right at the back end of the lottery.
Yeah, yeah. So like I think that on the surface, you would look at that trade and be like, why the fuck is Detroit not getting more value? But I would venture to guess they view Keon Johnson in that scenario as getting another first.
That's basically getting two first round picks and dead salary, and allows them to get, like, say, hey, thank you, Jeremy, for your time and service. We'll take our two first round picks,
right,
and we'll let Portland pay you. So that, I've seen that same pushback. Like, Detroit will get more for that. I'm like, do you want to put money on that? Because I don't think they will.
Yeah, I don't know who people think Jeremy Grant is, and like he'd be good for Portland just because he defends, he can play that stretch four spot for them, which obviously mm-hmm. with Nurkic there, they need. You know, he can play off Dame pretty easily. But like, I mean, you look around the NBA, like, that, there's, what teams are like, we're Jeremy Grant away, you know, like, and have the capacity to make an offer that is enticing? I think the other team that might be in the mix would probably be somebody like Washington, who's been sniffing around, I think, for a while on him. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I guess it's like, would they be willing to put a Kispert in a deal? Would they be willing to put Avdija in a deal or one of these guys? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And obviously Portland has that additional first they can trade. I don't think if Washington wanted to throw the 12th pick in, all right, now it's a different story, or 10th pick in, now it's a different story, but I don't think they would do that. So yeah, like, and you know, this Jeremy Grant thing, I just saw that Damian Lillard liked a tweet of like, I think, let me find it. It's actually pretty funny. Let's see. Oh yeah. Damian Lillard liked a tweet, and it's from a Thunder page suggesting that if the Blazers could get Jeremy Grant and Lou Dort for the 7th pick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Cronin says yes so fast he has a heart attack. I'm not sure that's true, although I do love Lou Dort, and I think he'd be a tremendous get for Portland. But, like, yeah, I like the idea of Jeremy Grant there.
Listen, if you're adding that value, if the number 7 pick turned into one of the better perimeter defenders in the league in Dort on a value deal and overpaying Jeremy Grant, and your lineup is now Dame, Ant, Dort, Grant, Nurkic for one pick, and you still have the other stuff to maybe go do something else. I think if they've exhausted the options at the top, like the bigger names, then yeah, I could see that. And here's where I think things get really interesting. Is if you're Portland in this instance, the other name I think to watch is, and we're talking about fours, Randall obviously falls in the same scale as far as pay scale with Grant, Randall, and the other guy's John Collins. John Collins is a name I've heard, and I've heard Atlanta wants to get off salary bad. And again, Portland, while they don't have cap space, what do they have? The capacity, the expiring contracts, and the capacity to take money back. They have, like, again, Collins makes more than the TPE, but in order to get Collins in, they can they have the ability with Bledsoe's contract to match it basically to whatever they need to and get it done. And that's the other thing, is they can go over the cap to re-sign Nurkic. They can go over the cap to re-sign Anthony Simons. So they have all of these mechanisms, and that's really what Cronin has done. He's allowed flexibility and all these mechanisms for them to go about and go after transactions in various manners.
Yeah, John Collins is interesting. I would prefer that, like, if I was a Blazers fan, offensively, I definitely see the appeal. And I actually think, to his credit, he's improved on defense.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like this is why it's so weird for me, because if you're going to make an offensive-type play like that at the four, I really think, like, Randall is a higher-ceiling opportunity. But for them, it makes more sense to go for a defensive guy. And I think, like, because you're going to have Dame, obviously, is going to be on his usage, and he's obviously going to have a lot of touches. I think it makes sense to get more of, like, I don't want to say 3 and D, because, like, Jeremy Grant and guys like that are a little bit more than just, you know, spot up stance.
They can do. They have a little bit of wiggle to their game.
Right. So like, but like getting more of a player like that makes sense to me. John Collins is a good player. I think he would obviously be an upgrade for the Blazers. And you know, look, I think if you're Atlanta, you'd probably want a guy like Josh Hart potentially back too in a package because they need activity. They need guys that give a shit on defense on the wing there so bad. Josh Hart would be a little bit of an upgrade for them. I do want to talk a little bit about DeAndre Ayton because you mentioned him, and obviously he is a name that is floating out there now with how unceremoniously their season ended. You know, is that a guy that at that point, like, would they think about trading the seventh pick?
So unequivocally, the DeAndre Ayton, that is them trading the seventh pick. That would be the seventh pick, probably one of Hart or Little and Yusuf Nurkic in a dual sign and trade, because Phoenix has to get a big back one way or another. And with where Phoenix's books are at right now, they do not have the capacity to sign a starting caliber center into cap space. But Yusuf Nurkic, by virtue of his bird rights, the Blazers can go over the cap, pay him, make Clutch happy, put him in a unique situation in Phoenix where he'd be on a good team. And I think both sides end up being happy in that situation.
Yeah, I think that would be a good move for Phoenix for sure. Now, is that, like, so once you do that, I guess they would still have the capacity to make the Jeremy Grant deal that you outlined.
So you get a little bit less, maybe, like, you're a little bit more limited at the 3-4 spots as far as, like, what you do. But I think with the idea of going for, and if you look at all these guys, with the exception of Grant, you look at Ayton, you look at OG, you look at Collins, how old are they?
They're like 23, 24, yeah.
So what you're doing is you're getting these guys that are all like, you know, deep playoff run tested vets, quote unquote, that are still stupidly young. They kind of split both timelines. So they'd be impactful on day one, which you don't get with a rookie, but they also are part of the next era if Dame does move on in 2 or 3 years or whatever ends up happening in the next era of Anthony Simons and those guys. Now all of a sudden you're loading up and now your roster makes sense, your books make sense, because for the past 5 years that just hasn't been the case in Portland.
Yeah. This all goes, like, I think the home run scenario is Ayton and Jeremy Grant. Like, that'd be an A-plus offseason, all things considered. So, if they're able to pull that off, like, how confident are you that they'll be able to put together, like, is that to you a team that has a chance to really contend in the West? And I know their pick situation is weird because the pick they traded out is like super insanely protected. Is that like, I mean, because you still don't have a lot of young talent there. I know Nas Little is there, who's had a lot of injury issues. Like, what is your confidence level then with just kind of like the ability to put out like a contending roster in that scenario?
They still need work for sure. And this thing is that I have actually appreciated about Cronin so far is that he has not been shy about this. It's the whole idea of like, they're not going to be like done in one cycle. They're not going to just all of a sudden, hey, this summer now that they're contending, they're back. No, it'll be in steps because he's laid out the fact that like they need a full cycle. So like multiple MLEs, multiple, you know, the BAE either this year or next year, multiple exceptions if they make, because one of the things that hasn't been talked about a ton is the Blazers have the bird rights for Joe Ingles. They're more than likely going to re-sign Joe Ingles to rehab in Portland from his torn ACL.
That's the Oladipo thing.
Yeah. And then you know what they're going to do? They're going to look to move him at the trade deadline where he's being paid probably anywhere between $10 and $15 million, that perfect contract that every team is looking for to get X amount of money off their books or to, you know, finagle something that makes sense for them to make an adjustment. And so they have that opportunity to be aggressive at a trade deadline again for a team that all of a sudden, now you've got Dame, now you've got Ant's under control in his books, Nurk's under control in his books, or if it's Ayton or Grant, they're under control in their books. Like, everybody's got their deals. So now you're going, okay, now what do we really need? and they can take a look at that and make a real assessment. Like at that point in time, you're going to have an understanding of where Nasir Little looks. Like, are you comfortable committing money to him long-term? Like, is he a guy you want to keep? If Josh Hart's still on the roster, do you want to keep him? Do you want to package him with that expiring deal to get a bigger name guy to come into Portland? Like, that's the thing is they, and this is where I give Cronin some credit, but it's with a very short leash because I've learned very much not to trust this organization over the last 5 or 6 years. But he has left him opportunities to make changes, to be aggressive. And in the past, that has not been there. So the long way around this is, yes, I think they'll be better. I think they'll be back to about where they were if they do the things I think that they're going to do or attempting to do. They'll be back right around where they were, you know, depending on anywhere from 4 to 8 in the West, because I think any given season, health is going to dictate those things. But I think when it's all said and done, they'll be around there, but they'll be in a better shape than they were. The roster will make more sense. They won't have 5 guys that are 6'3 or under, you know, getting plus minutes a night. So I think that's going to put them in a position to make some more effective changes and actually get some stuff done.
You know, as far as making changes, Chauncey Billups obviously had his first year as head coach this season in Portland. What did you think of the job he did? And is that a guy that did you see enough this year from him? I actually was, look, the Knicks played Portland in Portland and blew a horrific lead in the last quarter, in the fourth quarter. But like when I watched Portland, I actually thought, I mean, it was pretty interesting because they were clearly trying to tank down the stretch and they had to shut down like 2 or 3 guys because they started winning games again. Like because Nurkic came back and all of a sudden Ant and Nurkic were just like beating teams. And they were like, actually, you know what? You guys are hurt now. But did you see enough from him where you're like, yeah, I think this, like there is something here that are you confident about him? And, you know, what kind of was your takeaway from his first year on the job, which was very challenging in a lot of ways, obviously.
Chauncey's an incomplete entirely. And that's not even like a shot at him. He didn't coach a team that made any sense. You know what I mean? You look at it and they came out and they were a worse defensive team than they were last year. And I think a lot of that had to do with one, Dame being hurt. Two, the vibes on this team were a disaster. Everybody was just done. I think, like you said, Norm came back, you know, basically for the money. Cove was being put in a role he did not want to be in. It was so bad that he got benched. You know, a starting caliber guy making $12 million a year got benched. That happens a lot in the NBA. Chauncey and Neal at that point in time basically promised 8 different guys more touches, which that goes over well every single year. And Dame tried to accommodate. He tried to step back. One guy whose touches went up, who probably shouldn't have, was CJ's. I'm sure that ruffled more than a few feathers. His usage and his touches went up, and it was like, oh, whoa. You were not part of this. But Nurk wasn't happy because a lot of his post-ups disappeared. Norm wasn't happy because he's playing the 3. Cove is being tasked with being like an island one-on-1 wing stopper when he's a deep-lying helper. They're trying to blitz and be more aggressive and nobody's talking. Guys are dying. And it's just, it was bad. And I think the vibes and the injuries screwed up more than anything that Chauncey could have helped or hurt. And so I look at it and I go, I don't know, man. Let's see what he looks like with the new roster, because this almost the exact same time, Ime was, you know, this close, pinch your fingers together, to getting canned in January. And look where they are now. And I think that both those guys were coaching the same way. Probably throwing some of their guys under the bus where they maybe shouldn't have. Playing very, very aggressive styles, changing things up from what they were, holding guys accountable publicly. I think you just got two different reactions because one team was very much in the tank and the other one was like, no, we can do this. And I see some of the merit stuff that you want to see from Chauncey, but that's all theory. Like, we don't know how it's going to play out because the final 23 games of the season, they put on maybe the worst team in NBA history on the floor.
It was What did they lose, like 11 straight to close the year?
They lost 21 of 23, and those two wins they stumbled into were just shambolic wins. I mean, just had no business winning those games. One of them was against the Wizards, where I think Kuzma went like 3 of 19. God, what was the other one? I can't even remember now. They had the four wins before the All-Star break where Simons, which went absolutely bonkers and obliterated Trae Young and made Ja Morant look silly. But, you know, that probably cost them a top four pick more than anything this year. But yeah, that post All-Star break, that's the worst basketball team I've ever seen. I don't even say that jokingly. It's the worst basketball team I've ever seen. They competed, they played hard, but the talent deficit was so stark. Like, there's a lot of EuroLeague teams that would have competed and maybe beat that team. Like, it was just not good.